Nina Borzuki here, and this is The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them. This week on the podcast, we have a few name tag stories for you. Name tag is our occasional series where we are going to explore the stories behind place names. And it could be a street name or a town name or even the name of a building. And we have been getting a load of suggestions of names for us to investigate from all of you. Thank you so much. We've also been getting a load of stories about town names. And I love, love, love the stories, like this anecdote from James Pierce. He wrote in about a city in Ontario, Canada, formerly named Berlin, after the German capital. Turns out that during the, quote, patriotic fervor of World War I, the city changed its name so as not to be named after the capital city of Canada's principal enemy. So the Canadian Berliners, they decided to rename their city after the British general Lord Kitchener. And Berlin, Ontario became Kitchener, Ontario. We're actually going to have a story about an American Berlin. And for a couple more anecdotes, I brought in my colleague, Kenny Socan. She's here in the studio. Kenny, you have been...
Hello.
You have been busy helping Patrick and I dig into all of the questions that people sent in, which has been really fun.
It's been really fun, and I'm very grateful that I come from a small suburban town with an insignificant name.
So. What's the name of your town?
Maplewood.
Oh, yeah, that's so. Very, very, like, innocuous.
Yeah.
Well, you are going to share two anecdotes today, even though you've been digging into a lot more. But the first is, what's the deal behind the town Intercourse, Pennsylvania, which several people wrote in to ask us about this sort of peculiarly named town. So, Kenny, okay, Intercourse, Pennsylvania, what'd you find?
So, ironically, that town is in the heart of Amish country in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
You know, so those virtuous people have a very, very strange town name.
Well, to be fair, intercourse just means conversation. So it's just an exchange, you know?
And that's one of the theories for how it got its name, because in Old English, that term was used to refer to fellowship.
Okay.
Which would make sense for an Amish town. But it was originally called Cross Keys. And one theory is that there was an old racetrack called Intercourse. So people think that maybe over time it changed from...
Intercourse to intercourse. When was the town originally founded?
1754 is when it was founded. And then in 1814, its name got changed to Intercourse.
From Cross Keys.
From Cross Keys.
Okay. So, Kenny, this search for answers behind Intercourse, Pennsylvania sort of sent you down a wormhole of unfortunate town names.
Yeah.
Is that true?
There's some... America could take gold if there was Olympics for towns with dirty names, because especially Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is like a treasure trove of dirty names.
That's weird.
But one town that, you know, really caught my attention was Tight Squeeze, Virginia.
Tight Squeeze, like, all together,
Tight Squeeze, just one word.
Squeeze.
Just one
word. One word, Virginia. Where, why, what did you find?
So this town was founded in the 1800s. I'm not sure of the exact date, but apparently it's got its name when W.H. Colbert built his store in 1870, and he built it very close to the edge of the road so that when women stepped out of their carriages, they would step right onto the front porch of the store so they could avoid, like, getting their... dresses dirty or anything like that.
Oh, that's very convenient.
And then another man by the name of Isaiah Giles built his store towards the edge of the road. And so... Opposite of the other store. And so it just created a really small space along that stretch of road. And travelers started warning each other about the tight squeeze that you'd have to fit through in order to pass safely past those stores. So the name just kind of stuck, and they named that little town Tight Squeeze, Virginia.
Tight Squeeze, Virginia. That's so great.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Do you have any idea if those stores are still there today?
No, they're both torn down and have been replaced with other buildings.
And I wonder if it's such a tight squeeze to get down that road.
I wonder.
I'm doubting.
I hope they've given themselves more space.
I bet it's a big, big, giant highway. If anybody's from Tight Squeeze, Virginia, it'd be fun to hear from you. Well, thank you so much, Kenny. You actually have a whole article about some of the seedier town names found on PRI.org. So I will link to that in the podcast. And you're going to continue to do some research for us, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
So thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
So when Patrick and I were originally conceiving the Name Tag series, we reached out to a bunch of colleagues for ideas. And producer Julia Barton came to me with a story from her hometown of Dallas, Texas.
I have to confess that until recently, I had these certain assumptions about place names. There were like authentic ones.
What do you mean by authentic?
They were attached, you know, back in the day to a real event or a person.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So we know Houston was named for Sam Houston, who was the general of the Texas Army at the time. It makes sense. It seems authentic, right? But then there were all these other kinds of historic names, which I call, like, you know, commemorative names. Like, you know, there's this chain of movie theaters in Texas called Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. Like, what does going to a movie have to do with the Alamo? They just want a piece of cool, you know, Alamo. So I sneered at these names. But the place in Dallas that I want to tell you about, it does have a commemorative name. And I'm not sure it totally knows all of what it's commemorating in that name, which is why I love it so much.
Okay, so what's this place?
Hold on. Before we get to that, I want to widen out and start with this. The theme song to the TV show Dallas, which began airing in 1978, and when the French TV people picked up the show, they wanted the opening song to have lyrics to explain, you know, what kind of place this Dallas really was. Dallas, your pitiless universe. Dallas, you glorify the law of the strongest beneath your implacable sun, etc., etc. It's not exaggerating to say these lyrics became iconic to millions of French-speaking people around the world. And the song was a warning. Here is this new power, Sunbelt USA. It's filled with cruel oil men, their scheming, big-haired wives, and shiny skyscrapers. The first skyscraper you see in the title sequence is this bulbous concrete tower, like a ball atop a pole. It looms over a rippling mirror glass hotel, very futuristic and unmistakable. In fact, that tower and hotel had just gone up in Dallas. So the TV show Dallas was produced by Hollywood people who didn't actually know all that much about Dallas, or France for that matter. But here's the irony. Dallas and France actually have a very strong and weird historical connection, one that's reflected in the name of that bulbous tower. It's called Reunion Tower. And that name derives from the French La Réunion, which means the meeting. I'll explain the historical events behind Dallas's La Réunion in a minute, but first let's hear how the name Reunion got attached to the tower and hotel.
Can I brag for just a second?
Yeah.
Okay. Woodbine has changed the skyline of the city of Dallas and Fort Worth.
That's John Scoville, CEO and president of Woodbine Development Corporation in Dallas. They built Reunion Tower and the shiny Hyatt Regency Hotel next to it. It's fair to say Scoville is a player in Dallas. He's a powerful man who's quite involved in civic life here. But back in 1972, Scoville was a 26-year-old accountant. True, he came from a well-connected Dallas family, and he was hired by the son of another well-connected Dallas family, Ray Hunt, heir to the H.L. Hunt oil fortune.
What was your job title?
Whatever I wanted. I was president and janitor, so I was all of the above.
So Hunt owned some land near Dallas's downtown train station called Union Station. The land was not great. It was scruffy, down in a floodplain, hemmed in by railroad tracks and a big freeway. But Hunt and Scoville knew that city leaders wanted to see this part of town developed, with a hotel, even a civic arena. But the whole thing needed a name. John Scoville hired a marketing firm to find that name, which they presented at a meeting.
And their choice there was Esplanade.
Esplanade. Esplanade. Scoville thought that was pretty boring. Everything was called Esplanade in the 1970s.
In a moment of weakness, I raised my hand and said, okay, you know, it's not fair to not like the name. You have to come with an alternative. So I, for some reason, said that, you know, I would take that assignment on.
Scoville says he went hunting through Dallas history looking for some inspiration, and that's when he came across the story of La Réunion. That was the name of a colony of European socialists, mostly French, who came to Texas in the 1850s and settled across the river from Dallas. Scoville's planned development was nowhere near the site of this old colony, but...
when I saw that, I said, you know, that's the name.
Réunion, minus the French law. It was a nod to history, but Réunion also incorporated the name of the nearby Union Station, and it had other good vibes, high school reunions, family reunions. It gave the place a kind of exciting destination feeling. So they built it, and it became an instant landmark. I celebrated my 10th birthday up in the rotating restaurant atop Réunion Tower. I went to my first rock concert at Réunion Arena. Of course, I didn't know about the backstory of the name. Why would I? And yet that story is really interesting. The La Réunion socialists who washed up in Dallas had been sent there by a wave of political revolutions that had swept through Europe, starting in Paris in 1848. If you think of Texas as one edge of that wave that rippled out of Paris, the other shore is in Siberia. That's how big it was. The influential people caught up in this wave include Marx and Wagner over in Germany, Victor Hugo in France, Fyodor Dostoevsky in Russia. All shared a passionate hope for a new kind of society, whether in the form of nationalism or anarchy or socialism or democracy. But within a year, their hopes ended. Authoritarian governments came back with a vengeance.
The disillusionment was enormous because a few months later, it was back to a situation that was worse than before these revolutions, the Spring of the People, as it is known.
French historian Michel Cordiot has studied what happened to these revolutionaries, many of whom were imprisoned or exiled from their home countries. Some looked to the United States, hoping they could carry their ideals here.
So despite the difficulties, despite the distance, despite the fact that it was a one-way voyage to get there, well, many were bold enough to decide to go to the United States and try to do something new.
One of the most prominent of these exiles was a French socialist named Victor Considerant. He was an advocate of direct democracy and a big critic of capitalism. In 1852, he traveled to Texas to check it out, and he loved it. He went back to Europe and published a booklet called O Texas, To Texas. He wrote that this land was just waiting for French utopians. He actually found native grapevines in the wilderness, a sign. He called for socialists of all stripes to come to Texas and show the old world how it's done. It would be a meeting place, La Réunion.
Hélas, nous quittons une terre où l'on ne sait pas pardonner, où l'on demande à la colère.
Considerant was a very persuasive and trusted leader. He offered hope to all these despondent socialist dreamers. And within a few months, hundreds pledged their life savings to help build a colony in Texas. They couldn't fork over the money fast enough, much more than Considerant expected. So he sent his followers to buy some land outside of Dallas, which he'd visited on his trip. Here's a song some of the colonists wrote about coming to Texas. It's called Les Émigrants, sung to the tune of the French national anthem. The song alludes to the suffering that began as soon as they got on boats. They had dreams, but not a very clear idea of what they were getting themselves into. And Considerant had overlooked a lot of trouble signs. The Texas heat, the lack of a navigable river, slavery, and the violent politics around it, land speculators, hucksters, oh, and lots of snakes. And most of the European colonists had no farming skills. They were artisans and thinkers who expected paradise, not frontier misery.
It was a mess, you know, think about it, all those years.
That's Chris Thévenet, whose great-great-grandfather Michel Thévenet was part of La Réunion. I met him in West Dallas at a cemetery that's one of the few physical remnants of the colony.
I think Victor Considerant is really, he was a promoter, if you ask me. And he promoted as much as he could. And then when things failed, he disappeared.
Considerant was miserable in his frontier colony, especially when people started dying of typhoid. That's why he had to select land for a cemetery so soon after they arrived.
You know, there's some over here. And then you go back here, there's some Civil War veterans, I believe, back there in that one plot.
No one really knows all the bodies buried at La Réunion Cemetery, but we know children died here, and the elderly. In the summer of 1856, 2 years after the colony started, Victor Considerant basically ran away in the middle of the night. That left the remaining colonists holding the bag. They owed money to investors back in France.
I see all these deed records of my family liquidating a lot of the land, and from what I've read, it was like nobody really wanted to do it, and once it was over, it was over. And nobody, you know, Paris was a long way away.
Yeah. They had an adventure. You know, they tried to play farmer, and they didn't understand it, didn't know how to do it, and it failed.
That's John Scoville's take. La Réunion was an idealistic, harmless experiment. Harmless enough that he's built a whole shrine to the socialist venture in the lobby of his Hyatt Regency Hotel, the shiny building attached to Reunion Tower.
This is the area that is all about the original La Reunion colony.
The Hyatt's manager, Fred Euler, takes me to a long wall opposite the hotel's convention ballroom. There's a mural-sized painting about the colony and framed photos, certificates in French, old maps. The mustachioed visage of Victor Considerant stares out at the buffet tables of the convention-goers. Occasionally, they stare back.
You'll find some people will spend a great amount of time looking at it, reading, observing, and then others, they go straight to the ballroom and go to their meeting, and they don't even know it's here.
This hotel wall is the only place in Dallas that I know of where you can just stumble upon knowledge of La Réunion. The colony site itself was demolished a long time ago, and it left few traces. But at the same time, it left a huge mark.
They failed to found a colony, a socialist colony in Texas, but more or less managed to start Dallas on its way to becoming a major city. So, did they really fail?
Michel Cordiot, like a lot of historians, credits Dallas's early growth to the sudden arrival of all these bourgeois socialists. Many of the colonists did head back to Europe, including Considerant, but about 150 stayed. And they changed the fate of what was then a shabby little frontier village. It suddenly had architects, musicians, builders, bankers, editors. And when the Civil War broke out, many of these immigrants tried hard not to take a side. Some even hid out in Mexico to avoid the Confederate draft. After the war, the Reconstruction government needed non-Confederates to run the town. And there they were, these battered idealists.
They're beliefs were no longer as naive as they had been when they arrived in the USA, but they were still socialist.
I really wanted to know how much developer John Scoville thought about that ideology when he fell in love with the name Reunion back in 1972.
This was during the Cold War, right? And these guys were, I mean, they weren't Russians, but they were socialists.
They were.
Very hardcore socialists. Yeah. So was the dad ever come up in the room like, well...
No, because you know, if you go out on that street and ask 10 people, they won't have any idea, you know, of what it was. They didn't know that, you know, they've never heard of somebody named Victor Considerant.
It's true. Victor Considerant is pretty much unknown in Dallas, but that could be changing. A few years back, a Dallas arts parade featured a giant papier-mâché puppet of the failed founding father, mustache and all, holding a paintbrush. I guess to symbolize his romanticism. There are streets and parks around Dallas named for other colonists, but not him, even though he's the reason they all came to Texas in the first place. I guess it was hard for the surviving colonists to forgive the guy who fled, and then later wrote an angry letter calling La Reunion, quote, a fatherless bastard. It takes a lot to restore one's status as a founding father after a remark like that. But La Reunion never would have happened without him. It's the simple truth. You can't cut him out of the picture. Kind of like the vines at the cemetery site Considerant shows in West Dallas.
The French planted grapes everywhere. The French here, I've read, were, I know my family did.
Chris Thevenet says the fence of the cemetery was once so overgrown with vines you couldn't see in. Grapevines. He did some research and found out the grapes were muscadine, wine grapes from France. A few years ago, crews from the city cut the vines down to nubbins. But when we visited, you could see little shoots coming up.
It's nice to see that the grapes are coming back.
Yeah, you can't really.
You can chop the tops off, but you can't kill them really. It's you got to really work at it.
The roots are still there. French all the way down.
Okay, so Julia, I'm still trying to just wrap my head around the idea that this sort of shiny tower in Dallas, Reunion Tower, is named for a bunch of French socialists, and that there are roots of French socialism in Dallas, Texas.
I know, right?
It's so wild. When did you first hear about this connection?
I think it was just, you know, in an essay that mentioned the name of the tower, which I knew. This wasn't when I was in college, and I just went down this rabbit hole studying it. But to me, what's so interesting about these commemorative names and why I had to change my assumptions about their importance, you know, because we think like they're reaching back in time to give themselves some patina of authenticity,
right,
from history. But then in the case of La Reunion, I think Reunion Tower and the hotel kind of retroactively lend symbolic power to the past. I mean, the French colony is really an obscure footnote in both Dallas and European history, but now Reunion Tower is like this giant finger shoved right into the dusty tome of history, pointing directly at that footnote because of its name.
Imagine if Dallas's Reunion Tower had been named Esplanade. Man, La Reunion would perhaps have been buried as a dusty footnote in the history books. Continue sending us your name tag questions. Questions about a town name, about a street name, about a building name. You can email your questions to language@pri.org. And that's all for this week. Oh wait, the accent quiz.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Yes, it's the same one from last week. So far, no one has gotten it right. So now you have another week. Name the country where she's from. Bonus points if you get the region in that country. You can tweet us at LingoPod, or I'm at Porzuki, that's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I. And as always,
Thanks so much for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.